We have three cases on for argument today, and one will be submitted on the briefs. The first case is number 2008-1446, NRE Siemens Water Technology. And Mr. Moore, you may begin when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'd like to begin by discussing the shared and unshared sump claims. These are claims that were attacked by the PTO with an argument that it would have been obvious to modify the prior art triplex system in view of a reference called Feudel in order to achieve the claimed arrangement of a first chamber with an individual sump followed by two chambers that share a sump. We believe there are at least two fatal problems with this argument. The first is that Feudel does not teach an arrangement in which there is a first sump, first chamber with an individual sump, and two following chambers with the shared sump. The only embodiments that are actually described in Feudel are five chambers with one sump. There is a throwaway catch-all sentence at the very end of the specification, right before the claims, where those usually appear, that states vaguely that another possibility would be to divide the space into a plurality of compartments so that the gases could be treated sequentially with different washing liquids, each serving the purpose of dissolving another gaseous pollutant.
Well, why do you characterize that as a throwaway sentence? It's part of the teaching of that reference, is it not?
It is part of the teaching of the reference, but there's no disclosure there to explain to a person skilled in the art how that would be achieved.
What more disclosure is necessary? Or even if it doesn't disclose anything else, it nonetheless discloses the notion that vessel could be subdivided.
It discloses that notion in that context, but what is happening here is that the PTO is expanding the context of Feudel, which is fundamentally a system that is operating mechanically to dissolve pollutants from the airstream.
But it's using Feudel as a teaching with respect to that feature of dividing these vessels. And isn't that sufficient?
That's not sufficient because it's not telling a person, it's a water-based system, it's not telling a person skilled in the art how you would do this in a system like Jane invented where you have separate caustic chemicals operating in a single housing in one environment. There's nothing in this reference that would lead a person skilled in the art to think that you could take this system where you're dissolving particles out of the air with water and you could implement that with highly reactive chemicals right next to each other. There's nothing to say that if you had these in adjacent chambers, you wouldn't have one chemical flowing into the other. You'd have all sorts of terrible things going on that we just don't know about and the reference is silent on.
But the reference does, it not only talks about possibility of subdividing, but it also talks about using different washing liquids, each serving the purpose of dissolving another gaseous pollutant.
Yes, sir.
Which is not only the notion of having separate compartments, but having separate solutions.
It is separate compartments and separate solutions. It's not separate chemicals. It's dissolving. It's not separate chemical reactions. It's dissolving. That's the language that the reference itself uses. In contrast, in Jane, we have different chemical reactions going on in different stages. The second argument, the second flaw that we would ascribe to this combination made by the PTO is that the triplex device can't be modified to have the shared sump. If you do that, you destroy the core teaching of triplex and the related Davis patent of modularity. And this is not an insignificant thing, as the PTO would argue. In fact, modularity is fundamental in these earlier references because they were not capable of within a single unit adjusting to accommodate larger airflow. So, if, for example, this system is treating gas that's being generated by a municipal sewer treatment plant, and the municipality adds a sewer system, and all of a sudden the airflow is larger, what you have to do if you're using Davis is to add more modules. It can accommodate that within the system itself. So if you take Davis, for example, triplex, and you start cutting it apart and sharing sumps, you lose the ability to rearrange the modules, which is what's fundamental. It's certainly described in the triplex reference, and it's fundamental in the Davis patent. That's what Davis is all about.
But if you have a system that is No. On the one hand, a system that is modular, having advantages of, you know, easy replaceability of components and easy access, etc. And you have another system which is a combined unitary system, having perhaps advantages of being more compact in size. There are trade-offs either way. Does that necessarily mean that one is patentable over the other when you have choices, and either way you go, if it's modular, you give up some features and advantages of the unitary construction. If it's unitary, you give up some advantages and features of the modularity. And it would seem to me that all of that is entirely predictable.
Well, it's more than just that, because if you look carefully at Davis, Davis involves a system with one chemical where you're moving the treatment chemical through the system in a direction opposite the airflow, but it's the same chemical. So the pH, the chemistry is changing as you go. That only gets you so far in terms of what you can do. So Davis is very different, Jane is very different in that his system now, with the separate chemicals, the separate chemical reactions that are going on, he is able to treat the, he has essentially a pre-treatment stage in that first dedicated module that allows him to use, for example, a less expensive fluid. I think the patent describes it as being 10% the cost of the other material, and it gives him the flexibility to change the fluids and change the capacity of the system to meet changing needs. So it's more than just making something unitary that was modular and losing some advantages. It's actually a fundamentally different system. The fundamental problem that we see with the office's argument on this point is that, well, it's actually very telling, because what the office says is, well, if you have two chemicals and if you have three stages, there are only two ways to do this. You have to have shared and then common, or common and then shared. That's hindsight. What the office is doing is looking at the invention and seeing that it uses two chemicals, which is not in the prior art, and three stages, and saying, well, where do we need to get those pieces to put that together? It's not an appropriate analysis. There isn't a prior art system that has two chemicals and three stages, and we're just rearranging that. This is new to the art.
Was Feudal before the examiner that did the original work on 498?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Was Feudal before the examiner who examined the application that led to the 498?
Feudal was not before the examiner in the original prosecution. It came in.
I didn't see whether that was in the record or not, but I was just curious.
That's right. That's right. turning, if I might, to the unitary claims, the bigger picture here we think really disposes of the unitary claims. You couldn't have a unitary system with Davis because you couldn't adjust it. You would lose the ability to modify it to treat the different changing conditions, and you wouldn't do it because you didn't have the efficiencies that Jane gained. But more specifically, you know, the PTO argues that, well, it would be obvious to make Davis unitary because Feudal's unitary. Well, fact is, Feudal may be unitary, but there's no teaching anywhere in Feudal of an advantage to Feudal being unitary. So it just happens to be a box.
Why couldn't you have a series of sumps and interconnected lines in a unitary system that would, in essence, provide the same functioning capacity as the Davis system?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why couldn't you? You were saying, in essence, you simply can't achieve in a unitary structure the benefits of what you're able to get in the modular structure. I'm saying, why isn't it possible to construct a unitary structure that's got enough different sumps and pipes and whatnot running in it so that you're achieving inside the house, all the rooms are doing the same thing that the independent modules were doing in the other art?
Well, you could have an endlessly long system that's, you know, essentially...
I'm just responding to your question that you couldn't do it. Maybe I didn't hear you, but I was hearing you to say, well, I'm sorry, the modular system has all these advantages that a unitary system can't achieve.
Well, no, Jane's unitary system can achieve those advantages because of the unique chemical arrangement. So Jane can do what many modules of Davis does. Davis could not do in, you know, in three modules or two or whatever is what Jane does. So the PTO is aware of the fact that that FOIDL doesn't teach anything about advantages of being unitary, so they manufacture some, and they say, well, of course unitary is better, it would be more compact. Well, that cuts against the prior art in that it Davis is already described as compact. So the PTO's definition of unitary as compact is a little bit inconsistent with what's actually in the prior art. More to the point, though, there's no indication that making this thing unitary, no indication in the prior art, as opposed to in Jane's application, that making it unitary would make it smaller, or more compact, or better. For all we know, if you shared walls, you'd have to make them thicker, you'd have to reinforce them. There are many things that you could have to do in a unitary system that we don't know about, and we can't say. Similar with the piping that the PTO says you would lose, perhaps a person of skill would want access to that piping. We don't know. And these sorts of questions are why we went to the
During the re-exam, the examiner rejected your argument that N. Ray Larson was irrelevant. And Larson's our case that holds in essence that it's obvious for one of the skill in the art that if he knows about modularity to try something unitary, if he knows about unitary to break it up into modules.
If there's nothing more, though, Your Honor, here there is much more, right? There is the unitariness is facilitated by
in terms of whether or not it would have been obvious for one to modify a modular structure to make it unitary, why doesn't Larson simply answer that question yes? Why was the examiner wrong when the examiner rejected, and I read it last night, rejected your argument that Larson was inapplicable?
Well, I would say that Larson doesn't establish a per se rule that unitary is unpatentable. I would say that Larson says that in that case, unitary was unpatentable because it was simply a matter of combining two things that had been separate into one.
But I thought the examiner was reading Larson for a broader proposition.
And
what I'm asking you is, you know, why was the examiner wrong? Why would it be a bad rule? To say in a field where something is modular, it would be obvious for one ordinary skill in the art to convert modularity into something that's unitary. Draw a wall around the pieces.
Because exactly for the reasons in this case, it ignores what's actually happening in the field. It ignores the fact that it's not obvious to just make something modular where you would, for example, lose all of the teachings away, all of the advantages of the modularity.
You may or you may not. You may not want them.
It's true.
So in some particular unitary installation they talk about in the patent, well, somebody might want to, you know, build one of these things in the factory all in one piece and ship it.
It's true. And so it's balancing. And so what we have here is there is no teaching in the prior art of any advantage to unitary, and there's plenty of teaching of advantages to modularity. If it pleases the court, I'd like to reserve a couple
Certainly.
Of minutes for my rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. Moore. Mr. Krauss?
May it please the court. All the prior art references here are basically in the same field. It's the field of trying to remove unwanted constituents from a gas stream. The prior art includes the FOIDL reference. It's got the unitary multi-stage provision where the gas goes up and down and it's contacted by a solution raining down on it.
What's the reason to combine FOIDL with triplets?
Well, the examiner came up with several reasons. He said you make the system more compact. He said you simplify the system. He says you remove complex interconnections and plumbing problems.
So the reason to combine references is a factual issue under our law, right?
Yes, it is.
Whether to combine references.
Yes.
So I understand how this compactness, if you would, might become a fact if the case were being tried in the U.S. District Court. Because some party would assert that compactness is this, and they'd be cross-examined, right? And someone would come in and say, no, 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 there's some other reason to combine, and you would work through testimony at trial, and you would produce something that would be called a fact, and then I could review it up here as a fact for clear error. It's coming from the district court. How does an examiner manufacture a fact?
The examiner reads.
Well, where did he get this compactness notion? Was it in a handbook? I know what the MPEP says, he's required to come up with a reason.
Well, I think if you look at the two references, and again, we don't read compactness as necessarily meaning smaller. The first dictionary definition uses the term more firmly united, and we think that's perhaps more apt here. I think, you know, you would share walls, it probably would be smaller, but more firmly united is a fair definition of compactness, consistent with what he said about simplicity. And you see the simplicity if you look at the prior art references. Triplex has three modules. You have to do interconnections on the sump at the bottom and at the top, and you have to figure out a way to screw those three modules together, whereas a unitary system avoids those interconnections. You have fewer
parts. But is an examiner free to simply use the examiner's common sense and the examiner's experience in the field to say, here's the reason why I think these two references should be combined?
Yes, the examiner absolutely is free to do that. As this court acknowledged in Dystar and in Kahn, Kahn was quoted in the Supreme Court decision, KSR, the examiner needs to articulate some reasoning with some rational underpinning for doing the combination. But in Dystar, this court had specifically noted you don't have to find it in the reference itself. You can find, for example, because it's stronger, cheaper, cleaner, faster, lighter, smaller, more durable, or more efficient. More simple would certainly fall into that category. And that's really what we're doing.
So we are relying considerably on the experience, expertise, if you will, of the examiner, as the examiner looks at the prior art to decide whether there would be a reason, if so, what for a combination. Because it's going to become then a fact, and then if the board on review says, oh yes, we like that rationale, then it becomes a fact upon which we can only quibble with it if we find there was no substantial evidence to support it, right?
I agree that is the standard, Your Honor. It's a very favorable standard.
It's giving the Patent Office, isn't that a real thumb on the scale in a 103 analysis that doesn't exist in a district court? Isn't it a lot easier for you all to figure out that references ought to be combined and then for us to have a whole lot less authority to undo that?
Certainly, as far as making our prima facie case, it gives us a very sound basis for doing that. But before us, the applicant can always come back.
Does it make sense that there ought to be a different standard?
I think it does, Your Honor, because once the patent issues from the Patent Office, it has a presumption of validity, which is then very difficult to overcome in the district court. It makes sense to impose a fairly rigorous standard of proof within the Patent Office for the applicant to show us, no, somebody would not be motivated to make this combination. They can do that.
Well, the argument might run the other way around and say it ought to be harder to get a patent coming out of the Patent Office because it's going to get the benefit of the presumption of correctness.
I'm not sure I understood what you said, but
well, as I'm saying, I suppose in what you're really saying is it's easier for you to stop the patent's flow at the Patent Office.
Right. We think it, or we, you know, we acknowledge the courts have established this relatively high threshold, and we think it's not a bad idea because it forces the applicant before the patent issues to show us why this is deserving of an invention. And this is a case in point here. We see a lot of attorney argument in the brief talking about all these supposed advantages and cost savings and all that, but that wasn't presented in any kind of evidentiary form before the examiner or the board. We don't see any kind of secondary considerations considered by the board, so we don't really have that to review. But if they bring that to the Patent Office in the first instance, as the standard would require, I think that would make for a stronger patent.
And I suppose with respect to the factual questions of teachings and what the references show and common sense, I suppose to the extent that an examiner takes a position that something is a matter of common sense or perhaps a matter of design choice of no patentable consequence, to the extent that the applicant feels that the Patent Office has pressed a little too hard on that scale and tipped a little too hard in one direction, the applicant can press back and challenge that conclusion with whatever evidentiary basis the applicant has at his discretion, correct?
Yes, we're very open to receiving affidavits to establish where the examiner, you know, misunderstood the prior art. But the examiners, you know, at least as far as making a prima facie case, are entitled to rely on their own reasoning for why one would combine references.
Would it be enough for an examiner to simply conclude, Another examiner goes out, does a search, finds two references that show everything except one little item. So the examiner, dilemma. So the examiner says, well, I'm just going to say that that one thing that's missing was just a matter of design choice of no patentable consequence, period. Prima facie case made?
I think that's difficult. I mean, I think it may well depend on whether or not he can support his conclusion that that is, you know, if it's the question of a nail versus a screw or something like that, that might be a design choice, that might be supportable. But other than that, you know, if there is an element missing, an element in the claim that's not taught by the prior art, then that might be a grounds for suggesting that the examiner shouldn't be calling that a prima facie case. But that would depend on the exact record, and we don't have that problem here.
Talk, if you would, about what you view as the teaching of the portion of Feudal that is found at column 5, lines 26 through 30, when we talked about that a bit with your opposing counsel. But I'm curious to hear you articulate how much you think that passage teaches vis-a-vis this invention.
I think counsel read it already, but it teaches subdividing this existing shared sump into a plurality of compartments, and it also suggests using multiple chemicals. And
now, that's where I think you may have a different view from your opposing counsel. He characterized this as not really involving the same kind of chemical process, and therefore not really revealing, I hope I'm not mischaracterizing his argument, but not really disclosing the invention.
I think that's fair when you look at the specifics of Feudal. Feudal is about dissolving the unwanted constituents in a gas stream as opposed to using a chemical reaction to get rid of them. I do think the overall teachings of Feudal are certainly broader than that. This is simply about how to design one of these units. There's nothing in the claim specifically that explains how they've achieved this division of compartments to accommodate the different chemicals. In fact, there's no indication in their claim that the chemicals are somehow incompatible. In fact, the earlier claims having to do with unitary housing only involve one chemical anyway. This only shows up in the shared sump issue, but there it just refers to a highly reactive chemical agent and a less reactive chemical agent without necessarily saying anything about them being incompatible, much less showing how that incompatibility was somehow solved by the way they divided the sumps. And if you look at the Jane patent itself, they seem to have divided it very similarly to the way it's divided in the Feudal reference. And I could note also, I noticed last night in the blue brief itself refers us to several places in the Davis patent itself. The Davis patent, we don't rely on that because it was not prior art, but they brought it in to support their teaching away argument. The Davis patent itself, in several places, discusses the use of more than one chemical. And I am, now this is, the Davis patent starts at A1466, but I'm thinking of on both A1471, column 2, lines 58 through 65, they discuss this idea of using more than one treatment fluids, and that's acknowledged.
Well, if you were using different washing liquids, might you not be using different chemicals?
Your Honor, I believe so. We're just kind of debating this point. Maybe in Feudal, the washing fluids are only for the purpose of dissolving chemical the constituents, and you might say dissolution is not necessarily a chemical reaction. I think that's the argument that opposing counsel is making, but I think it's a very fine line. And again, I'm just pointing out that even the Davis patent prior art certainly shows that in the context of the very kind of system he's talking about, the gas, the odor removal system, you can use more than one kind of chemical.
Well, Feudal expressly says different washing liquids, each serving the purpose of dissolving another, presumably a different gaseous solvent, so we're pollutant.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it only turns on this difference between dissolving as not being a chemical reaction.
But it is, isn't it? I mean, isn't the extent to which something can be dissolved in a particular solvent a function of its chemistry?
I believe it's very close. I did a Google on this very recently, and you know, dissolving sugar in water, they say, is not a chemical reaction.
I mean, to take the simplest case in the world, you know, you can dissolve grease in liquid that has soap in it, water that has soap in it, but not in water that doesn't have soap in it. And that's because of the chemistry of adding soap, right?
I'm really not trying to quibble with you because I support your argument.
Yeah,
there is a counter-argument in the field of chemistry is all I'm saying, but I don't think it
matters. Maybe I'm cross-examining the wrong part.
You just don't want to overstate your case.
That's all. Okay. If there's nothing further.
Mr. Moore.
Just a couple points that I would like to make, Your Honor. With respect to compactness, I would argue that there is no substantial evidence to support the finding of compactness. It's clearly inconsistent with Davis. They say foidal is unitary, and you would use that because it's more compact. Well, Davis already describes itself as being compact. So in the prior art, we have compactness being applied, the term compact being applied to what is already a modular unit. It's not bolted or firmly united, I don't believe. Although I would also point out that the PTO's definition of compactness as firmly united is almost essentially what we're claiming as unitary. So now they're the word games are changing around, but in the end, there isn't substantial evidence, we think, to show that a person of skill in the art in 1998 would have found foidal to be something that would have made Davis more compact or that it would be more desirable for any reason at all. With respect to foidal, they're relying on the overall teaching of foidal. Understandably, not wanting to talk about the chemistry, I don't think. But the overall teaching of foidal, if you look at it, doesn't show, again, the individual sump and then the separate sumps. They would say foidal, it's just Tinker Toys. It's just, you just move it around. Whatever you want to do, whatever you put in your claim, we've got, because we can take foidal and we can move around these chambers. We don't believe that a person who was working in the art in 1998 would have seen that. And it's clear because these were not the systems that were being employed then.
What would that person have taken away from foidal?
The person who's designing a system like Davis?
Yeah, you say that, or person of ordinary skill, you've conceded that foidal is on the table, it's pertinent, it's prior art, so it's got to be considered, and you keep saying, well, one of ordinary skill in the art in the field that you wanted to be in would read foidal and would be unimpressed by foidal, would not have reached the conclusions that the examiner and the board reached as the teachings of foidal. So I'm saying to you, what would your hypothetical person of ordinary skill have done with foidal?
Well, nothing in the context of a chemical system like Jane was.
Well, they would have said, well, foidal is unitary, but so what?
They would have said foidal is a system for knocking down combustion gases. They would say foidal is not a system where there are chemical reactions taking place within the system, and certainly not a system where there are very diverse chemicals.
So your person is extra smart and says, I wouldn't learn anything from something very simple.
I'm sorry, I'm not.
Well, isn't the problem is that foidal is just too simple?
No, I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor. I say foidal is not, it's not that foidal is too simple, it's that it's just not applicable. It's a different environment.
It's not dealing with noxious enough gases, is that what it is?
It's not dealing with noxious enough chemicals, yes.
But you're looking at foidal and you're saying, well, a person of ordinary skill in the art would have only looked at the things that are different about foidal, wouldn't have looked at anything that's similar or anything that might be helpful.
Well, I would say that the person would look at it and set it aside initially, but if the person looked at it in more depth, I would say the person would think, well, there's nothing in this reference that shows me how to do it with these caustic chemicals.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is